promise with Arab interests, and reappraisal meant suspension of US aid until Israel improved its behavior. It was a historic proposal, the first time since Eisenhower that a US president even hinted publicly that Israel's response came not from its own capital, but from the US Senate. Instead of relying on a direct protest to the White House, Jerusalem activated its lobby in the US, which, in turn, signed up as supporters of Israel's position. More than three-fourths of the members of the US. A more devastating and intimidating response could scarcely be conceived. The 76 signatures effectively told Ford he could not carry out his threat and reappraisal. Israel's loyalists in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans alike, were sufficient in number to reject any legislative proposal displeasing to Israel that Ford might make, and perhaps even enact a pro-Israeli piece of legislation over a presidential veto. The letter was a demonstration of impressive clout. Crafted and circulated by AIPAC, it had been endorsed overnight by a majority of the Senate membership. Several senators who at first had said no quickly changed their positions. Senator John Culver admitted candidly, "The pressure was too great. I caved. So did President Ford. He backed down and never again challenged the lobby." This wasn't the only time Hathaway answered AIPAC's call to oppose the White House on a major issue. 3 years later, Ford's successor, Jimmy Carter, fought a similar battle with the Israeli lobby. At issue this time was a resolution to disapprove President Carter's proposal to sell F-15 fighters to Saudi Arabia. The White House needed the support of only one chamber to defeat the resolution. White House strategists felt that the House of Representatives would overwhelmingly vote to defeat the sale, so they decided to put all their resources into the Senate. The Israeli lobby pulled out all the stops. It coordinated a nationwide public relations campaign which revived, as never before, memories of the genocidal Nazi campaign against European Jews during World War II. In the wake of the highly publicized television series, Holocaust, Capitol Hill was flooded with complimentary copies of the novel on which the TV series was based. The books were accompanied by a letter from AIPAC saying, "This chilling account of the extermination of 6 million Jews underscores Israel's concerns during the current negotiations for security without reliance on outside guarantees." The pressure was sustained and heavy. Major personalities in the Jewish community warned the fighter aircraft would constitute a serious threat to Israel. Nevertheless, a prominent Jewish senator, Abraham Ribicoff of Connecticut, lined up with Carter. This was a hard blow to Maurice Amite, then director of AIPAC, who had previously worked on Ribicoff's staff. Earlier in the year, Ribicoff, while keeping his own counsel on the Saudi arms question, took the uncharacteristic step of sharply criticizing Israeli policies as well as the tactics of AIPAC. In an interview with the Wall Street Journal, Ribicoff described Israel's retention of occupied territory as wrong and unworthy of US support. He said AIPAC does a great disservice to the US, to Israel and to the Jewish community. Ribicoff could now tell the truth: he did not plan to seek re-election. The Senate approved the sale, 52-48, but in the process Carter was so bruised that he never again forced a showdown vote in Congress over Middle East policy. Hathaway was one of the group who stuck with AIPAC, but this was not sufficient when election time rolled around. AIPAC wanted a senator whose signature and vote could always count on. Searching for unswerving loyalty, the lobby switched to Cohen. Hathaway was defeated in 1978. The loss to the Senate of Charles Percy. One of the leading lights of the Senate has been Senator Charles Percy of Illinois, who began his first term in 1967. In his first election, 60% of Jewish votes. Illinois has the nation's fourth largest Jewish population, went to his opponent. But in the next 6 years, Percy supported aid for Israel, urged the Soviet Union to permit emigration of Jews, criticized PLO terrorism, and supported social causes so forcefully that Jews rallied strongly to his side when he ran for re-election. In 1972, Percy accomplished something never before achieved by carrying every county in the state, and, even more remarkable for an Illinois protestant Republican, received 70% of the Jewish vote. His honeymoon with Jews was interrupted in 1975, when he returned from a trip to the Middle East to declare, "Israel and its leadership, for whom I have a high regard, cannot count on the US in the future, just to write a blank check." He said Israel had missed some opportunities to negotiate, and he described PLO leader Yasser Arafat as more moderate, relatively speaking, than other extremists such as George Habash. He urged Israel to talk to the PLO, if the organization would renounce terrorism, and recognize Israel's right to exist behind secure defensible borders, noting that David Ben-Gurion, Israel's first prime minister, had said that Israel must be willing to swap real estate for peace. A week later, Percy received this memorandum from his staff: "We have received 2,200 telegrams and 4,000 letters in response to your Mideast statements. They run 95% against." As you might imagine, the majority of hostile mail comes from the Jewish community in Chicago. They threaten to withhold their votes and support for any future endeavors. That same year, Percy offended pro-Israel activists when he did not sign the famous Spirit of 76 letter through which 76 of his Senate colleagues effectively blocked President Gerald R. Ford's intended reprisal of Middle East policy. This brought another flood of protest mail. Despite these rumblings, the Israeli lobby did not mount a serious campaign against Percy in 1978. With the senator's unprecedented 1972 sweep of the state fresh in mind, they did not seek out a credible opponent either in the primary or the general election. However, the 1984 campaign was dramatically different. Pro-Israel forces targeted him for defeat early, and never let up. Percy upset Jews by voting to support the Reagan administration's sale of AWACS radar planes to Saudi Arabia, a sale also supported by the Carter administration. These developments provided new ammunition for the attack already underway against Percy. Percy's decision was made after his staff members who had visited Israel said they had been told by an Israeli military official that the strategic military balance would not be affected, but that they did not want the symbolism of the US doing business with Saudi Arabia. Early in 1984, AIPAC decided to mobilize the full national resources of the Israeli lobby in a campaign against Percy. In the March primary, it encouraged the candidacy of Congressman Tom Corcoran, Percy's challenger for the nomination. One of Corcoran's chief advisors and fundraisers was Maurice Amite, former executive director of AIPAC. Corcoran's high-decibel attacks portrayed the senator as anti-Israel. His fundraising appeals to Jews cited Percy as Israel's worst adversary in Congress. A full-page newspaper advertisement, sponsored by the Corcoran campaign, featured a picture of Arafat and headlined, "Chuck Percy says this man is a moderate." A letter to Jewish voters defending Percy, and signed by 58 leading Illinois Jews, made almost no impact. Although Percy overcame the primary challenge, Corcoran's attacks damaged his position with Jewish voters, and provided a strong base for AIPAC's continuing assault. Thomas Adine, executive director of AIPAC, set the tone early in the summer by attacking Percy's record at a campaign workshop in Chicago. AIPAC encouraged fundraising for Paul Simon and mobilized its political resources heavily against Percy. It assigned several student interns full-time to the task of anti-Percy research and brought more than 100 university students from out of state to campaign for Simon. Percy undertook vigorous countermeasures. Former Senator Jacob Javits of New York, one of the nation's most prominent and respected Jews, and Senator Rudy Boschwitz, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee Subcommittee Concerning the Middle East, made personal appearances for Percy in Chicago. In addition, 100 Illinois Jews, led by former Attorney General Edward H. Levy, sponsored a full-page advertisement which declared that Percy has delivered for Illinois, delivered for America, and delivered for Israel. This support proved futile, as did his strong legislative endeavors. His initiatives as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee brought Israel $425 million more in grant aid than Reagan had requested in 1983, and $325 million more in 1984, but these successes for Israel seem to make no difference. A poll taken a month before the election showed a large